9. Plague Planet. Chapter 21. Dragon meets up with Philemon in a courtyard just below the fortress's soaring chapel complex. A personnel carrier lies smashed against its far end. It is raining soot, a drifting pall like black snow. His warriors lurch through it, dozens of them, their armor gradually turning black. Far above, beyond the flames and the smoke, the clouds are flickering with strange light. The wind does not feel natural in this place. Further back, Legion rhinos roar their way into the courtyard from the streets beyond.
"You're sure?" Dragon says. "It has already started," Philemon says. "I've attempted to contact the siege master. No reply."
Dragon looks at Philemon for a moment. He has always had the Taliman down as one of Vork's closest allies. What is his purpose in this? Is he seriously fostering some kind of revolt at last, or is this just a tactical move to stave off destruction by the Weeping Veil? Perhaps both. Perhaps neither. There is no use speculating, for Philemon is right about the matter at hand. Time is running out, and someone needs to act. Wide stone stairs, heavily gouged, lead up to an open gate. Walls soar up on either side, monolithic, like all imperial constructions, scored with a giant impression of the hated Aquila. Dragon cannot hear screaming any longer. All that remains is the heavy crump of munitions, the low grind of gunships plying between the spires. There is fighting still. The Space Marines are clinging on. Word-bearers and unbroken kill squads are still finding resistance to squash. Naum enters the courtyard then, cracking the stones as he staggers between the disembarking troop carriers. He drags a cluster of bio-cables and armor pieces, black with amniotic residue and the last flickers of electrical power. Others of Dragon's command are en route, and more will come as they heed his call. But so slowly, always so slowly. Dragon turns to see figures emerge from the gates above, word-bearers clad in their dark-stained crimson plate. Dragon climbs the steps towards them, flexing his claw. As he does so, he sends a silent, prepare command to the unbroken at his back. Philemon climbs too, his bolter drawn and his books stowed in chained clumps across his back. Little lords scamper with him, picking up the strips of parchment that fall from the piles and trying to stuff them back into bundles.
"Stand aside," Dragon says, reaching the gate's threshold.
The word-bearers level their guns. From the base of the stairway, Naum looks up, eyes cloudy with confusion. The ash falls faster, and flames lick across the parapets. One of the word-bearers, the leader of their squad by his markings, takes up position under the gate's lintel, a crackling brass power blade held loosely.
"This place is secure," the warrior says. "Find somewhere else to tarnish."
Dragon never stops moving.
"Stand aside."
The word-bearer takes a step towards him.
"Like I said."
Perhaps he believes the Death Guard have forgotten all initiative. Perhaps he thinks they will shamble up stupidly and debate this with them, or perhaps he thinks that his allies are so thick-headed they would just slink meekly away. Dragon's talons punch through his chest before he has the chance to move.
"Aside," Dragon growls, then flings him bodily into the gate's edge.
Bolters open up, a chorus of hard bangs, blowing unbroken from their feet. The Death Guard return fire, and the stairs instantly become a crashing, debris-blasted battleground. Philemon swings into action, firing liberally, escorted by screaming little lords that fly at the enemy, ripping and gouging. Naum lets loose with a dull roar of confused outrage and smashes his way heavily up the stairs, his immense arms already swinging with gathering momentum. Dragon is a whirl by then, a blur of speed and power. He hacks at the nearest word-bearer, gouging lines through the brass and ceramite before spinning into the next. A bolt shell whistles past his helm. Another strikes him on the kneecap, but he's still moving, cutting and punching, driving under the gate's shadow. He breaks through the cordon, heading under the gates, and then into chambers where Imperial banners have been torn down and trampled. There is blood on the polished floor here, but no bodies. The scale of the architecture around him becomes ever greater. A succession of loftier spaces, solemn spaces, lined and scored with the imagery of the Ministorum. Graven images line the stone walls, and relics of old wars lurk in side chapels where statues of the fallen loom. Amid all the smells of battle, the pungent undertone of incense still lingers. More word-bearers race to intercept him, to prevent the unbroken getting through, and the fighting intensifies under the sorrowful gaze of the Emperor's angels. Dragon drives his way through them, absorbing the hits and repaying them in kind, swept up now and buoyed by his battle brothers around him. Naum is fully engaged, his stupor banished by the sights and smells of battle, flailing around as if truly possessed. He seems to have picked up one of the word-bearers in his left claw, and is using him as a bloody cudgel. Dragon sees more unbroken go down under bolter barrages, and not all get back up. Philemon himself runs into trouble and is soon fighting hard against two determined word-bearers, despite the shrieking assistance he gets from his coterie of little lords. Only one pair of doors remains, gilded with images of serpents and angels, the burnished surface marred by great rents. Dragon can hear something on the far side, a roar, like a sea coming in. Light is spilling from the gaps between the doors, red as embers. He slams into them, breaking them open, and the crimson haze spills across him. Dragon stares out, past the empty-eyed statues, past the lines of candles and the smoky braziers, past the ranks of protective word-bearers and their slaved cultists. He sees what has to be done, what has been gathered together, and finally understands the Taliman's urgency. From behind him, he hears his battle brothers labor as they fight their way to his position. He hears Naum's huge bellows and detects the helm-laced signals of yet more unbroken converging on this location. But it will all be too late. As he looks out and sees what is about to happen, he knows it must be too late. There is no defeating what comes next, no time to muster a defense, no space to do what must be done. The Weeping Veil have made their move, and now only pain awaits.
What were you trying to do? Vaux asks.
Clado is struggling to speak. That is not surprising. His mouth is a bubbling swamp of blood, and his cheekbones are gone. Zidius was really quite brutally efficient.
Garstag,
Clado attempts.
Yes. Garstag, says Vaux, working for me, hunting the ship for me, asking questions for me. No one suspects him for some reason, maybe the way he looks.
Clado laughs, and blood trickles down his ruined chin.
Ah,
he says.
Just tell me why.
Clado collects himself. His breath is filtered through collapsed lungs. Somewhere within his body, the flesh is rapidly re-knitting. He was a space marine once, and his much altered body retains some of that old restorative capacity.
That chance,
Clado says, chewing on what remains of his tongue.
To master the ship. You won't lead, Vaux. Someone had to act.
So many tell me this. We'll win here, though.
But your habits, your mind, it's gone.
We bring faith to the galaxy. You could have waited, trusted. The rewards would have come.
Clado laughs and winces from the pain of it.
What rewards do you have for us, Siege Master? What rewards does the Primarch have for us? I do not wish to run an old war again, over and over. I wish for something new.
Vorks looks at him.
Then you are a fool, he says. We were given something new once. Look where it got us.
Plato laughs again. It seems he cannot stop.
You are the Legion, he says. A weapon made for an older galaxy. You never evolved. We never evolved. I'd have changed that.
Vorks shakes his head.
I tolerated you, Plato, for what you could do for us. In power, you would be an abomination.
Plato tries to smirk.
Yes, I think I would.
He hacks up blood. His hands are trembling now.
But I damaged Solas. I don't know if it can recover.
It already has.
They'll know,
Plato says, searching now.
The others, they'll know.
Vorks moves gently, placing both gauntlets around Plato's neck.
Your wounds were given by the corpse spawn. This was carefully arranged. I will grieve with the others for your loss when your body is found here.
He starts, carefully, to press.
You thought me weak, Plato. Dragan thinks me weak. The Weeping Veil, those deluded pilgrims, they think us all weak. It is in the pattern, though. It is all in hand.
Plato is gurgling. He fights back, pathetically, for his strength has already been driven from him.
Everyone asks me what I want, Vork says. I want what I have. I want this. Here. This is our time.
Plato's limbs jerk. What remains of his face goes red, then purple.
We will make it to Ultramar, Vork says, softly now. We will fight under the Primarch's banner. After that, who cares? What more could there be but that?
Plato dies, gagging. His limbs fall limp. His chest shudders still.
You wanted something new, says Vorks contemptuously. Now you have it.
Vorks relaxes. He looks down at the surgeon for a little while. His expression is just as it always is, that mask of corrosion, the armor mark of another age. He looks up. The gene seed vault lies ahead, whirring faintly. He casts his eyes over the shelves, looking at the ranks of tiny vials. Before he can move, a priority signal worms its way up from the sea of many runes swimming across his visual field. With some reluctance, he activates it.
The Veil have moved, Lord, says Philemon, sounding both anxious and irritated. If you can hear this, time has run out.
So little faith. All of them. So little faith. Vorks has half a mind to stay where he is and let the consequences of their doubt damn them. He stands, though. He looks around. Then, slowly, he reaches for the incendiary device, the one that will chew through anything organic and render it down to drifting atoms. He primes it and holds it up before the gene vault. For a little longer, he gazes down the lamplit rows, at all the learning there, all the potential, all the power. Then he tosses the live charge, letting it roll along the floor into the vault, and turns on his heels, scythe in hand. There are thousands there, tens of thousands, culled from every cache and refuge in the fortress. They stare, dull-eyed and terrified, chained together in groups a dozen strong, and herded onto the chapel's capacious marble floor. Every shackled group has a robed cultist to guard it, armed with a long serrated knife that snarls and glows with bronze-tipped flame. Above them soars the nave, 50 meters up, its blank stone now swimming with whirling swatches of lurid illumination. In the great voids, in the curving vaults and the iron-lined shafts, energies have been kindled, spiraling in mid-air like nebulae. The images, hanging in stately isolation, are all defaced, turned upside down or scratched out. Crude octeds, 6 meters across, have been engraved into the granite tomb faces. The flames snap and ripple across them. These are the citizens of the Sabbatine who took refuge in the citadel, dragged up from the deep places, chained together and hauled into the chapel. Their faces are grey, their mouths slack, staring at the swinging lights as if mesmerized. Their clothes are ripped, hanging off them like ribbons, their movements sluggish. Cult priests swagger among them, carrying flails and smouldering censers, declaiming in a language Dragan does not understand. Other cultists, arranged in choirs around the edges of the crowds, are chanting, repeating a sequence of syllables over and over. The sound makes the stone itself resonate, a vibration that thrums up from the crypts below, running up the pillars and shivering the high arches. Dragan has emerged through east-facing doors set several meters above floor level. He can see word-bearers stationed all through the grand chapel, at least 100, guarding every ingress and overlooking the teeming throngs. He hears Naum and Philemon fighting in the chambers beyond, sloughed into combat by those outside and struggling to make headway. Even if they slaughtered all that opposition in moments, they would struggle to make any dent against those ranged against them in here. He can already feel the rites accelerating. Dragan has little sympathy with the nature of the warp, but he does not need to. A child could detect what is happening. The chapel's ceiling is already translucent, bowing under the enormous pressures from above. He can see frail shapes on the far side, enormous figures coiled like fetuses, struggling hard against shackles imposed by the damaged physical universe. There are three of them, gigantic beyond reason. One is lithe and disturbing, a pale shade with barbed hands and a crown of thorns head. Another is bullish and blood-red, already roaring. The third is bird-like, spindly and scrawny, but reeking of sour magics. They are so close, tearing at the thin wards that keep them from bursting into physicality. In their wake, he detects legions, cohorts, ranks of the Neverborn on the cusp of spilling down from that incipient rift, scrabbling with cold fingers to make the leap into reality. Such desecrations are easier now. This is what they are learning, what the priests of sacrifice already know. He cannot understand why Vorx was so trusting.
"Desist!"
Dragan roars, preparing to vault down from the balcony to make at least a gesture of defiance. At the far end of the nave, the Master of Ceremonies turns to face him. He has taken himself up into the great imperial pulpit and stands beneath the shadow of a desecrated Aquila. Dragan recognizes Maul Jalchek's veined armor from the Iamandar, the tides of black flame that hiss across his ceramite plates, the Crozius that he now bears openly and unchained. The apostle is surrounded by his retinue, a motley collection of the warp-sick and the void-touched. The air is singing. It tastes of blood already, and there is more to be spilled. Rage is futile here, for the preparations have already been made. There is a crackle of ozone, a leap of green-edged lightning, and a gust like storm wind races down the long, tall nave. Before Dragan can move, he feels the ice chill of a warp translation, a teleport, or some other location-shift sorcery wrapped in a smoky cloak of foul, fly-blown detritus. Vorx shudders into being at the opposite end of the nave, far from both the pulpit and Dragan's vantage, his outline clattering with broken hoarfrost, his scythe glassily caked in it. As the ether winds gust, he looks briefly magnificent, unveiled into hidden splendor with bone-pale armor and an erect, warlord-like bearing, before the clouds thicken about him again, his spine curves and his battle-plate curdles, and he is just Vaux once more. The siege master, relic of the ancient world, thrust like a canker into the agonized present.
Mor Jarlchek deigns to acknowledge him.
"In time to witness the taking of this world from you," he shouts, his hard voice ringing down the long vaults. "You should never have shown us the way here."
Vaux stands there, isolated, the last fronds of his sorcerous passage still spitting around him. He does not respond to Mor Jarlchek, but shoots a final glance, meaningfully, at Dragon.
"Do nothing," he voxes,
a dry whisper among the cacophony of massed chants and cries. The apostle raises his crozius, which crackles and shudders with black flame gusts. The air is ripe now, ready to catch, spitting like boiling oil. Naum's cries are still audible, getting closer, but Dragon follows the order, remaining where he is. Mor Jarlchek throws his arm down again, sweeping it like a dagger strike, and every priest on the floor of the chapel plunges their knife into the heart of a captive. Then they work their way through the crowds, going quickly, expertly slaughtering in their practiced, efficient ranks. The flames in the braziers leap, the air flexes, 100 blades flash again and again, the crescendo of sacrifice that will rip the last shreds of the veil aside and unleash the demonic apocalypse. Dragon looks up to the translucent vaults. He braces himself for their collapse, for the rush of the Neverborn and the hurricane of murder. Every word-bearer in turn lifts his blade, saluting the eldritch army they have ushered into being. Mor Jarlchek cries out in ecstasy, a shout of triumph that echoes from chancel to chancel. And nothing happens. The priests keep stabbing, but the bodies do not fall. No blood splatters on the marble, just a thin black dribble where the steel is withdrawn. The citizens sway a little, wince a little, but then the blank looks return. The priests grow panicked and hack away, but nothing changes. Nothing is sacrificed.
"They are already dead, Mor Jarlchek," says Vaux dryly,
the cloud of flies growing around him, multiplying exponentially.
"Stab as much as you like. We got to them first."
Mor Jarlchek is slowly realizing the truth. He calls out to his warriors, and they lower bolters at the crowds. The priests, seeing what is happening, scramble to get out of the way.
"There will be no rituals here," Vaux says calmly, striding down from his teleport locus and swinging his scythe in lazy arcs. "No demons, no magics, no gifts from the gods. We have claimed this world, and our plagues now encompass all of it."
The word-bearers open fire, sending volleys of mass reactives into the crowd. The mortals go down in clumps, blown apart and hurled into one another, but still no blood is spilled, and still no souls are released. These are just meat sacks, flesh puppets and revenants, the product of Slurt's piped poisons, and no god will dignify the culling of such spoiled goods. Dragon finds himself laughing as he watches. He looks out at the terror on the faces of the priests and laughs harder. Vaux is striding into the heart of it now, swinging his scythe in those crushing parabolas, taking on the word-bearers who are belatedly turning to face him. Above it all, the vaults begin to solidify, darkening back into stone and iron. The whirling lights fade as an angry howl of frustration shimmers across the gulfs. And now the flesh puppets are rising up too. They are limping towards their tormentors, reaching out to grab at the necks of the robed cultists and drag them into the quagmire. The word-bearers wade into the midst of them, firing solidly, but even they begin to get bogged down, snagged into a thickening slush of clutching fingers. Naum finally emerges then, smashing his way through the wall behind Dragan and lurching wildly into the fray. More unbroken pour through the gap, locking onto the fighters of the Weeping Vale, firing with steady precision. Teleport loci begin to whirl into life on the fringes of the chapel, all of them pale green and tainted with blowflies. Garstag strides out of a mist of smashed crystal, his armor seething from the transition and his toothed chainsword snarling. This is carnage now. This is sudden, glorious carnage. Dragan leaps from the balcony, crunching down to ground level, and races at the beleaguered word-bearers. They are suddenly easy prey, hampered by the bodies lurching into them, stricken with uncertainty. Dragan lashes out, catching one at the neck with his talons. The warrior swings round, shaking him off and aiming his bolter. But Dragan is already at him again, cracking the weapon away and going for the throat. The blades bite deep, severing the helm and wrenching it off. Then he is moving further in, striking out, hunting the next target. The numbers have turned. The crowds are almost inexhaustible, a half-living wave of insentient meat that clutches and throttles. More unbroken arrive, and Dragan begins to realize that they were not all summoned by him. This has been planned, timed, measured for maximum impact. There is calculation here. There is numerology. He fights his way out into the center of the nave, beginning to feel the sharp kick of battle lust again, the first time he has enjoyed it for a very long time. Soon he is with Vorx, and the two of them charge the enemy, scythe and talons in concert.
"Most trusted servant," says Vorx dryly, slicing across a retreating apostle with that terrible blade. "Siege master," Dragan replies, falling in alongside, joining in the killing.